Jeff Merrick, host NHL and CHL on Sportsnet. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, 7:30 a.m. on Thursday, and then Saturday morning at 3:30 a.m. That's the game from Beijing, the one before that from Shanghai. Vancouver facing off against Los Angeles. The interesting story there is Vancouver not bringing Brock Besser, who, as you guys know, has been a huge story so far in Vancouver camp. But yeah, we're not excited about that Golden Knights, Tyler Wong, Lethbridge Hurricanes, overager, big great story, undrafted. Come on, that's a huge story, Elliot.
I'm embarrassed. And by the way, you sound terrific this morning.
Thank you, sir. Really good. Bring my voice for you.
So what are we to do? I mean, we always, the National Hockey League, they seem so intent on these rules that they bring to us. They're going to crack down on slashing. This thing that everyone has been talking about for years and years, feet in the face-off circle. I know that has everyone's attention, but will they still be calling this by the end of October?
They maintain that they will, and
they even though I know.
Even though fans may not really care so much for the new faceoff rule and the new faceoff infraction, how they're cracking down, this is something that if you talk to like three or four guys about it last year in the NHL centerman, this is something that they've talked about for a couple of seasons now. How guys are cheating with their feet as they get into the dot, how they angle their body and turn their butt. Crosby, you know, very much behind the scenes and off the record, you know, a lot of times would sort of grouse about this after key games, about how tough it is to win draws when guys now get in there and shift their feet as they anticipate the puck drop and essentially cut the faceoff circle down in half. So while it might not be something that, you know, fans really cared about or maybe even noticed, this is one that's squarely on the players. They've had enough of guys cheating at the dots with their feet, and you see the effects of it now.
Do you look at the stat, the face-off stat, and say it's really significant still? I kind of cringe at face-offs. I kind of cringe at hits because guess when you get hits? It's when you don't have the hockey puck, right?
Yeah, that's funny because the whole analytics movement has turned everyone around on hits and the value or lack thereof of hits. And I think faceoffs, I mean, you always want to have possessions. You always do want to win the draw. Better to do so than lose it generally, unless you're in the offensive zone on a power play. And it's actually advantageous to lose the draw as long as you have a forecheck that can turn the puck over within 10 seconds around the net because you force a scoring opportunity. See Anaheim Ducks, see Ryan Kessler versus, Ryan Getzlaff versus just about everybody in the Western Conference. But I take faceoff stats with a grain of sand unless it creates a scoring chance within the, I don't know, what do you say, Greg, between 5 to 10 seconds. Yeah, I mean, after that, you can just look at a face-off as being a puck battle. And just like digging a puck off the boards, that's a face-off for a winger. A face-off for a center is that little drop at the dot. But I don't put a ton of stock in face-offs. I just think it is one sequence in a chain of events. Better to have the puck than not, certainly, but I don't really give it that much value more than any other puck battle on the ice in the offensive or defensive zone.
So wonderful, National Hockey League putting in these new rules when everybody's complaining about the same thing. There's not enough offense in the game. And we've heard some suggestions of a guy doesn't come out of the box like they used to have during a two-minute penalty, or like Jack Eichel suggested, and I like that one. You're laughing already. Take away the offside. Let the guy play deep. Let him play below the blue line. I'm for that.
Old RHI, Roller Hockey International. We're going back to the early 90s. Hello, Toronto Planets at Varsity Arena. I'm with you. I'm with Jack Eichel on that one. Been part of that, you know, that chorus that's been banging that drum for a number of years. Who gets excited at zone entries or zone exits? I know they're fun to track and all that. And look at Josh Hosang. He's a zone entry machine. Wow, isn't that great? That's fine and dandy. But if we want to increase goal scoring, NHL keeps sort of picking around the edges. I'm going to do this with the faceoffs. I'm going to do this with, you know, we're going to line up in the offensive zone after this play, and it's going to add a couple of pucks here. If you really want to make a change, and you really want to do something about the game to make it a little more, I may still maintain more TV and even live event friendly as well, it's going to need something significant. And for me, it's get rid of offsides and get rid of icings. Like, I always ask myself this question, Elliot, because I can hear a lot of people in their car right now saying, Merrick, you're eating space cake. What do you mean get rid of icings? Get rid of offsides? It's part of the game. I always ask people this. If I gave you the concept, like a loose framework for what hockey was right now, let's say hockey had never been invented, and I gave you the loose framework for what a hockey game is right now and said, Elliot, Greg, I want you to make the rules for this game. Would you make offsides? Would you say this thing needs a zone and there needs to be a line that you get and we're going to blow a whistle if you don't get that? Or would you say, lines? Why would you put lines on there? Open it up. Let these guys fly around. Like, we're so burdened and weighed down by history. If you could create it right now, Elliot, if I gave you a brush and said, make hockey, would you take that brush and make blue lines and a red line in the middle?
I feel like I would.
Because I wouldn't.
I would do something similar to soccer, but I don't know exactly what I would. What I wouldn't do is make the neutral zone as small as it is. I want more neutral zone. I want smaller. And yet I want that offside line maybe to be different than the...
Why?
Because I do think you are going to have the proverbial cherry picker. You will.
So what? That's great. That's awesome. So either you make a decision to cover that person, and then it's 4-on-4 in the offensive zone, or you say to yourself, let him hang out down there. We're going to create a 5-on-4 in the offensive zone. We're giving ourselves essentially a power play, and they're letting us have it. It forces a decision.
I know, but it will take away from the... look, we've already... I watch Brett Hull play games, and he just hangs out of the opposing blue line the whole game. So he would just be having a coffee with the goaltender the whole game if that blue line wasn't there. That's as far as he could go. Give us a team you think... I've isolated five teams I think will have be pretty bad in competition for the number one overall pick. One's obviously Vegas, Colorado, Vancouver, New Jersey, Arizona. I'd even throw Detroit in there. Any of those six and you go, I'm not so sure. Maybe they won't flirt with the playoffs, but they won't be as bad as we think they will be.
Interesting that you didn't put Arizona in there. And I'm with you on that. I think Arizona is a much improved team. Like, I'm with you on all those teams. You know, I think one of the great questions going into the season is, who's going to be worse, Vegas or Colorado? I think it's a legitimate question, and there's no guarantee that Colorado is going to be better than the expansion team.
And do you not think Vancouver and Detroit will be as bad as those two teams?
I don't know if they'll be as bad. I mean, Vancouver certainly has a shot at it. I still think there's enough. There's Detroit gets the goaltending. They're going. They're not going to make the playoffs. This is not a playoff team. But I just don't see them in Rasmus Dahlin, Andrei Svechnikov territory quite yet. But we'll see what the season brings. I still think there's too much with, Zetterberg had an outstanding season last year. We'll see who ends up, bouncing back if Dylan Larkin can turn it around as he plays center now. But I see that Vegas and Colorado, they're really, 1 and 2 in that turtle race. And shortly after that is Vancouver. The interesting point out of all of it is I don't think anyone's counting Arizona out of making a playoff now. When you look at what they've done, the way they were able to fleece the Chicago Blackhawks and get Nicholas Chalmerson to do almost something similar to the Florida Panthers and pick up Jason Demers. As everybody says, it's impossible to get a top four defenseman. John Chyko went out this summer and got two of them. So maybe all of a sudden you start to look at the Coyotes and say, they have an outside chance to make the playoffs here. They've done a really good job addressing issues. They have the netminder. That's a question mark. Derek Stepan comes in as a number one center. That's going to help. Mm-hmm. We'll see what Clayton Keller, Dylan Strome can do. I think one of the interesting questions there is that Arizona is no longer in that conversation for people.
Talking hockey with Jeff Marek, host NHL and CHL. On Sportsnet, we saw the Ottawa Senators last night against the Leafs, and I don't think there's been a team that has made the National Hockey League Conference Finals that is less respected than Ottawa is going into this season here. They'll be without Carlson for a while, and yet, it was just one preseason game last night, but they did make it to the conference final last year. They must have some talent. Why are they so dissed?
Because they overperformed in just about every single category. When you break it down and you have a look at the numbers behind the numbers, every year there's that classic team. It was Colorado a number of years ago. It was Minnesota. It was Maple Leafs after the lockout run and losing in 7 games to the Boston Bruins. There are always some teams that overperform by way of shooting percentage and save percentage and then come back down to the pack the next season. And everybody this year is pointing at the Ottawa Senators, way overperformed at just about every single position by their underlying numbers. And everyone's saying these guys are due for a crash. Not to say that there's not a lot of talent and a lot of skill on that team. You know, outside of Carlson, still don't love the back end. Anderson continues to get another year older, although he seems to just be getting better every season for some bizarre reason. I think everyone's ready for the Ottawa crash. They were the underdogs in I think every single series they played last year. And all they did was, take out you know, the Habs and the Rangers and the almost took out the Pittsburgh Penguins, or Boston Bruins rather than the Pittsburgh Penguins. They probably should get more respect, but everyone looks at the underlying numbers, I think, and says, these guys are ready for a fall. Not unlike Toronto years ago, not unlike Minnesota, and not unlike Colorado.
Before you go, anything changed for you in the last 24 to 36 on Joffrey Leupel, where this situation goes? Will this just be a peaceful remedy? Is simply he doesn't say anything else, he gets his money, we don't see him, and the Leafs get the cap relief?
Yeah, the games start, and all of a sudden that story just goes away. I think that's probably in both sides' best interest. When I first saw it, my first thought is, where's the PA on this? You know, I'm not sure if you felt the same way, Greg, but my first thought is, if this is really legit and not just some guy goofing around on Instagram, which it probably was, where's the Players Association on all of this? I really feel this is a, you know, a 48-hour news story that now just vanishes and goes away, and we're not reminded about Joffrey Leupel until maybe this time next year.